Welcome to Culture Eats Strategy.
Eats Strategy.
With your host, entrepreneur Jamie J. On this podcast, we unpack the most powerful, intangible culture.
Culture
is way more than a mission statement or words on a wall. It's how a company behaves. It's what informs every decision, action, and reaction. Culture is the invisible hand, the true north that guides every organization. And if you create a legendary culture, you will build a legendary company.
A legendary company.
Now, here he is, Jamie J.
Hey there, it's Jamie J. And you've probably heard me talking. I'm actually going through a pretty big shift in my professional life, and I guess in my personal life, since I don't believe in work-life balance, I believe in life balance. And this shift that I'm doing is closing down one entity that many of you may know of as Slapshot Studio, which is a big web development company that I created and ran for many, many years. And I've decided to really focus. And my theme for this year is focus. And I created an acronym, Finding Opportunities by Creating Uninterrupted Strategy Sessions, which means take some time to just think. Turn everything off. I don't even have a notepad when I do this, but I do it every day now. And I just think. And if I remember one of the thoughts or ideas that I come up with, that means it's something worthwhile doing. If I forget about it, it wasn't meant to be. So I'm really, really big on this focus thing. And that's why the shift from where I was talking previously to entrepreneurs about their experiences and stuff like that, I don't want to go too far away from that, but I really want to focus and hone in on company culture. And when I talk about company culture, I'm talking about what happens with, you don't have to have a bunch of people on staff, but there's other people that you will work with in order to grow your business. There just always has to be, whether it's vendors or contractors, whatever the case may be. And that's one of the reasons that I'm really stoked to be talking with Matt Kubler today. And hearing about some of the stories in our pre-interview really sparked a lot of ideas, and I'm super excited to introduce him. As you heard in the introduction, he's got a lot of stuff going on, and he is all over the place right now, and really, really awesome to have him on the show. I can't thank you enough. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Dude, I'm stoked. I think this is going to be a great one, and it's a different direction for me as far as what I've been doing a lot on podcasts, so I'm really excited to see where it goes.
Oh, this is awesome. Well, I wonder, maybe you can tell us a little bit about who you are, what you've been doing, and then we'll jump into some really cool dialogue.
Wow. Okay. I am, first and foremost, a servant. That's what I do for a living. I've been doing serving for most of my life, 4 years in the Army. I'm still an active police officer for the last 25 years, former federal air marshal after 9/11, 2009. I started my entrepreneurial world. I got bit hard, borrowed a crap ton of money that I probably would never be able to pay back otherwise if I wasn't successful. Started a company called Max Out, which is a fitness-based gym and manufacturing business. And that's led me down the path of where I am now, where I'm hopefully transitioning out of law enforcement, launching a new device next month. And I'm also an inspirational speaker and leadership developer and human performance expert. That's me.
That's fantastic. Well, first and foremost, thank you for your service. What branch of the, or what was your MOS in the Army?
Intel.
Intel. Wow. Okay, cool. I was one of those guys that jumped out of the airplanes.
See, you had a better, well, we were in two different armies. Intel Army is a little bit different than everyone else's Army. I mean, we still had the same nonsense as far as basic training and going through EIT. But once you got the duty station, the Intel community runs a little bit differently than, say, infantry does. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm proud to have been in, and I'm proud to have been out.
Thank you for your service too.
Yeah, it was good. And thank you for all your service. Being a cop, that's, take some cojone.
It's a different job today than it was in 1993 when I started.
Oh my gosh. Well, what kind of propelled you or took you to this path of entrepreneurism?
That's a long answer to a very short question, but
let's hear it.
I've always been an entrepreneur, and I didn't know that until I really became one. But in high school, I had a little side business doing writing term papers for people. I would read the first and last chapter and make up the rest. And then I guaranteed grades and I charged for that. I had a forgery business. I stole 2,000 hall passes and I charged $2 per hall pass for people that wanted to get back into class.
Oh my gosh.
At a small little, I wasn't Pablo Escobar, at a small little marijuana business in high school as well, where I sold a little bit of marijuana. Not proud of that one, but it's part of my story. And I learned from it. And obviously, I've been a cop for 25 years, so that wasn't a long-term opportunity for me. I didn't have that side in me for very long. But yeah, for me, my life of service and the life of helping other people led me to becoming an entrepreneur. I'm not, and it's weird, I went in the military and in law enforcement where conformity is really a big part of,
yeah.
And I'm the most anti-conformist there is. And I'm not sure how I survived the last 30 years in those two environments, but I did very well because I was kind of able to take my leadership skill sets and lead in a way that allowed my anti-conformist nature to be strong enough to where I can get other people to buy into my culture that I, sure. Sure. Not one that follows very easily. I'm a horrible teammate in some respects because I have to be able to believe in you and believe in something before I just jump in. There's plenty of people that I've followed that I think are phenomenal leaders that I would walk into the pits of hell for, but I don't do that very easily. And you know, I think for me, when I went into military, I needed to see that from people. And if I didn't see that, then I took the lead, even in situations when maybe I wasn't high enough rank to do so, but I found myself in charge. And then law enforcement, you know, I was on the SWAT team for 12 years. I did just about everything in law enforcement you can possibly do. And I did it on my terms within the rules and the boundaries of the department, but
sure.
I created my own way of doing things in that realm. And I think that just served me to be an entrepreneur when finally that opportunity presented itself.
What do you think it was about? Was it like an authority thing? About taking orders or about being told what to do?
I know the answer. I mean, the answer for me is very simple. I was born in poverty. My mom was a single mom. My dad left when I was 9 months old. She worked 3 jobs. I spent a lot of time on my own with my brother, Andy, who was autistic. Even though he was older, I was the older brother because he was autism. He had autism before autism was a thing. And this is in the 70s and 80s. And stuttered profusely and, you know, living in public housing. I got in a lot of fights. I was just very much independent from a very early age. And I never really got out of that and allowed myself to not be independent. I have a very strong personality, but I also have a very strong understanding of who I am. And I don't really go in areas where I don't feel I'm going to be successful or have value. So, you know, when I went in the military, it's something I always wanted to do because I love serving. But I was able to somehow, not without some bumps in the road, but I was able to have a really good career where I was highly decorated and I got out on my terms and proceeded on to become a cop. And I was able to do that by still maintaining my individualism.
See, that's really cool. I can kind of resonate kind of where you're going from. I mean, I was never a cop, but I was in the 82nd, which is, it's
an organization,
but it's pretty, you know, like you're in it. And it was hard for me. I was raised, little brother, our family was there. It was cool, but I'm not exactly sure where it came, but I remember hating being told what to do. And I had to say that if I go back, I had to learn a lot because I thought, forgive my French, my shit didn't stink. I thought, man, I could do this and I don't need someone else telling me. Now, if I look back and I'm like, wow, they knew a lot. I should have really, you know, learned more and stuff like that. But it transitioned into my corporate life. So I spent 12 years in corporate America and I had a nickname, JT. And that stood for Jamie Time because I couldn't stand going to these meetings. I couldn't stand the way somebody was doing this. And if I had an idea and I wanted to do it, there was so much crap I had to go through to get something I wanted to do done. It was just always very frustrating for me. And I don't know if that's the same with you, but I imagine there's a ton of red tape, especially all the procedures and policies you got to be as a SWAT team member and all that.
Yeah, I am, you know, I understand the basic fundamentals of everything I'm doing. Like SWOT has certain fundamental principles of what it's about and what it does, and the techniques and tactics of firearms.
Rules of engagement.
Hostages, all that stuff. And just learning how to be a good SWAT operator as far as hostage rescue and barricaded gunmen and all those kinds of different things and things you had to learn how to do, I was all for. But when it came to actually getting into the thick of it, if I didn't believe your talents were enough to get us through, I made sure people knew it beforehand and we had a conversation about that.
Mm.
And because I just feel strong enough in who I am. Now, mind you, I was a complete ass growing up. I just was. Looking back on it, I was stubborn and I still am. You know, all the things that make me who I am in a good way today, I didn't necessarily utilize those in the most forward-thinking, progressive way when I was a kid.
Sure.
And I think every kid has that. And then the military allowed me to grow up. And then my time in law enforcement allowed me to see the world in a day-to-day, in your living room kind of way that gave me a better appreciation for everything in life because I see the highs, the lows, the good, the bad, the rich, the poor. I see it all. And in 25 years, there isn't anything I haven't seen, I don't think.
I can only imagine.
Oof. And that's allowed me to then take all that knowledge and information and create programs, like leadership programs that I have that I know for a fact work. And it allows me to take everything that I believe about myself and my strengths and my weaknesses and my stubbornness and hard-headedness and use it in a way that is benefiting other people.
You know, I really like the background that you shared with us today. What I like about it is your authenticity. And I don't use that word lightly. It's thrown around quite a bit. But in my opinion, authenticity in this form is I think you have to be authentic. The honesty that you share, I think, is unbelievable. A lot of people wouldn't say, hey, I had a marijuana business when I was growing up. A lot of people are afraid of what others think. And I think that you, by simply embracing who you are as a person, more people will be up to trust you and work with you and things like that. So a nice segue at this point might be, from what you've learned in your past and everything that you've done and all the experiences you've been through, what has that allowed you to do as far as creating a culture? And do you have staff right now?
Yeah.
You have a staff. So what kind of culture, what does culture mean to you?
Wow. Yeah, it's the first part of your question. Everything I've cultivated in my life, every experience, every moment, every heartache, every pain, I didn't mention my brother passed away when I was 18 in a car accident. And
my little brother passed away too in a bike accident. So
wow, I'm sorry for
that. I feel you. Yeah.
You know, I was heartbroken. I mean, I couldn't love for 13 years. And I couldn't forgive myself. I couldn't forgive God. I couldn't forgive my brother. I had so much anger inside of me. And I put a facade of toughness, of recklessness. And it allowed me to stay alert and I allowed fear to sort of be like a drug to me. And you know, I put myself in a lot of positions where it probably wasn't safe. I was always the first one in and I was constantly tempting God to take me because my brother was honest and innocent and pure. And there was absolutely no reason why someone who struggled as much as he did for 21 years deserved to die. And my heart was shattered and I couldn't love my wife when I married her and I couldn't love my firstborn child, my daughter.
Why wasn't it you?
I just couldn't love. I had no ability to love. And coming out of that in 2002, when my son was born and I was given a gift of a quilt of all things, by my grandmother who the week my brother died was staying with and she, kept all his clothes for 13 years. And for whatever reason, it was 13 years later that she provided me a quilt made out of my brother's clothes that, changed my life. And it didn't negate the 13 years and everything that I experienced in those 13 years, but it allowed me to forgive myself and begin to forgive God and forgive my brother. And, even though my brother did nothing wrong, I was just so angry that he wasn't here because I wanted him here. And, I needed to have, a moment of forgiveness and it was given to me. And so from that, I learned a lot about me and by allowing myself to re-access my heart and re-access my soul and everything about feeling again that it's allowed me to become way more in tune with other people and their needs and their feelings and their wants and the reasons why they're succeeding or not succeeding, because I can really connect. And it's something, you know, when you have a brother who stutters, and I'm talking about eyes rolling in the head, kind of stuttering, he doesn't speak like clearly, and he couldn't convey what he wanted. So I had to read his body language and understand his behaviors. And when he was happy or sad or angry, upset or agitated or anxious, and just knowing how acutely aware I was of those things, I didn't know at the time that I was beginning a process of doing that for a whole lifetime as an intel analyst, as a cop. Like, I'm taking all the stuff I learned from my brother and using it in my life. And then once I was able to clear my heart and become more in tune with myself, I was able to really tap into that and then use that skill set to help other people find success. And that's, to answer your question about culture, is I try to get to know every one of my team members and put them in positions where they have the best ability to be successful. And my business partner, I try to, you know, make sure that I'm inspiring him to have his best chance to be successful as my partner.
Right.
And when I go into schools and talk to kids, you know, teaching kids how to be leaders is a culture setting environment. You know, a lot of schools don't, most schools don't do leadership development.
Yeah.
They don't have a culture other than you're in school, and if you're on the football team, you have a football team culture. If you're on the basketball team, but there's not a school culture. And I've actually created a program for that. And I have my first school is actually starting it this year out in Western Pennsylvania. And it's a beta program, but it's going to take probably 2 years to start to see the fruits of it. But
fantastic.
Yeah.
What do you hope to get out of that? Like,
I want to change a culture. I'm going to change the culture of a generation.
Wow.
Think about that. Think about what we have today. You know, the millennial generation. There's so many things said about the millennials, good and bad.
Yeah.
You know, the entitlement feeling, that kind of stuff. And I'm not saying everybody is, but that's the generalization of the culture in that group of people, millennials. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be able to get into the schools and get into an age group of, you know, 7th, 8th grade through 12th grade and start influencing those kids. Now, if you think about it, in a school, 60 to 65% of every school is athletes. That's just the breakdown of the population of the school. Wow. And if you had an ability to have touch points on 60 to 65% of your population and create a culture within that population that's universally across the board the same, and send them out with an understanding that leadership comes from selfless service, and that selfless service starts with the kids in your classroom, the kids in your school, the hallway, the lunch table, and you start building that culture within and rewarding that culture with positivity and reinforcement and bringing in outside speakers and outside influencers, and you keep building that process. Everything in life is about habitual practice, right?
Yeah.
If you put yourself in a positive mindset every day, you're going to have positive returns on your life. If you're sitting around gloom and doom all day, you're going to be gloom and doom in your life. I mean, everything in life, whether it's physical fitness and strength and conditioning or mental training or leadership development, it's all about creating that environment of habit, of positive habits every day. And if you do that, you can change the entire culture in a school and in a generation.
That's amazing to me. I
was going to steal that, but this is going to be my evidence when I see the hell out of it.
Well, thankfully, I'm focusing. So it's bottleneck virtual assistants for me, and that's it. So, but I am so interested in learning about different cultures, company cultures, social culture. I'm really interested in learning about this and learning from different perspectives. Like you said, I couldn't agree with you more. I think junior high, as the age is there, whether that's 7th, 8th, 9th, 7th, 8th, whatever that is, it's such an impressionable time in our next generation's life. Like, that is, to me, that is more impressionable than high school. In high school, they're kind of cool. You know, you're starting to get a little bit of that, I think, in junior high, but it's the same way. Sarah, my girlfriend, and I, we hate single-use plastics. We hate the pollution in the oceans, and we really want to create awareness around that. And our goal is, in 2020, to sail around the world, creating awareness for this. And we want to go and hopefully share our videos, our stories with the different cultures that we meet and run into to junior high level kids because of their impressionable age. I just think it's fantastic that you're doing this. And you mentioned, so when you're doing this endeavor, is it going to be like physical conditioning and mental conditioning kind of?
Yeah. So I'm going to, it's out there. It's going to be out there. And I want it to be out there. And at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter if I started it, as long as it gets done. It starts with a strength coach. So most schools don't have a strength coach because it's deemed as everybody looks at it as, oh, we're doing performance enhancement. When in reality, all you're doing is creating healthy environments for kids that they can utilize for the rest of their life. If you teach a kid how to properly exercise and properly lift weights and properly have good nutrition and healthy habits, that's what strength coach does. It comes off as this screaming, yelling drill sergeant who's making you do squats. But at the end of the day, it's a person who's probably the most in tune with your child's well-being. Mm. And, an English teacher gets their kids for one class and they only have their class. They don't have the entire ninth grade. They just have whatever class kids are assigned their classroom. A strength coach has every kid that is participating in a sport. And most that are good strength coaches have programs designed for the kids that aren't in sports so they can learn how to do lift weights and stay healthy and do exercise. Sure. But if we focused only on the touch point of kids that are participating in sports at the middle school and high school level, if you put a strength coach or two in that environment and that strength coach has the understanding and the ability to connect and inspire and to give kids a feeling of hope and that someone's got their back and is always going to be there for them because they're putting them in positions where they're not comfortable. They're putting them in positions where they have to push past their mental limits and then their physical limits. Because it's always the brain stops the body before the body's ready to stop. Because the brain goes, whoa, it's too much. And if you can get a strength coach, and there's one in New Jersey who's a very good friend of mine who's also a client of ours. And he's doing it. He's been doing it without knowing he was doing it for the last 10 years. He has the benefit that he's in a Catholic school, so he can bring faith into it, which is, I think, a powerful tool.
Sure.
But in a public school, you can't. But you can bring in the substitute for faith and the believing in something bigger than you, which is serving others. That has nothing to do with God. It's from the Bible, but it has nothing to do with God. If you just go out every day and don't believe in God and you help people, I believe you're going to go somewhere nice at the end.
Yeah.
If you teach kids how to give and then receive that gift back, and you show them the value, like I said, I smoked some weed, I sold some weed. I know what getting high feels like. I can tell you I've never had a greater high than when I see a kid have that moment where they understand exactly what I'm talking about. When that just resonates and they go, this is exactly, yes, I get it.
Yeah, amen.
Have that. It's awesome. And if you can get 60% of your kids buying in, or the opportunity to try to get 60% of your kids to buy in, because you don't have that opportunity in any other school environment, no other classroom or program do you have an entire, pretty much majority population all in one area.
Mm.
And all it is literally is a commitment to hiring two additional staff. And the rest can be done with no money.
That's amazing. That's amazing. I think, what's really cool? I need to introduce you to my friend Danny Bauer. He has Better Leaders, Better Schools. Podcast, and it's amazing. I need to introduce you to him.
Please.
This will resonate perfectly. He was a former principal, and that's who he reaches out to, all these other principals. That's who you need to talk with, by
Please.
The way. So I will definitely do that. Danny Bauer, shouts out to you, man. Matt Kubler's coming around. what I really think, and we'll wrap up here shortly, but when you were talking, there was a commercial that was on, and forget the brand, it doesn't matter because the commercial was really nice. A person dropped an apple and someone else walked by and picked it up. And then that person that picked up the apple went by and, a broom was going to fall over on somebody and he stopped it.
I just saw it the other day. Kid fell on a skateboard and he helped the kid out.
Yeah. Oh, it was amazing. It was like the ripple effect of kindness. And it's almost selfish. Like Sarah and I, last year, went and supported a family in need for Christmas. We got Christmas gifts for their kids. She had been beaten by her husband. They were separated, but she was in a tight spot. Yeah. And I I remember leaving and Sarah and I just looked at each other. We just had these big smiles on our face. We're like, ah, I feel so good. And of course, you know, it was coming back to us. Kind of felt a little selfish because we felt so good. But at the same time, you could just imagine the smiles on those kids' faces Christmas morning when they see all these gifts that they weren't expecting to get. It just, that little thing of giving or kindness is so amazing. And we were happy. I'm sure something else happened that day that we didn't even realize because of our giving and kindness. And for you to realize this, number one, and realize this in our youth, number two, and to build something that isn't currently there, it blows me away.
Well, it's hardest part is getting buy-in from schools because nobody wants an outsider coming in and telling them how to run their school. No one wants to admit that they have a culture problem. No one wants to admit that bullying's a real thing. And at the end of the day, bullying is simply in existence because we don't have enough leaders. Mm. And that's it. We can have as many assemblies we want as, you know, tell a parent, tell a friend, tell a teacher, you know, whatever. All that stuff is great. But no offense, it's been going on forever since our parents were in school. And it's not stopping because we haven't addressed the root problem. I do it when I'm working with people with neurological and their muscular disease in my business, and I'm helping them rehab. I'm going to the root of their problem, not the symptom. And the symptom is sometimes not even directly related to the problem. And I think in life, especially when it comes to youth, we need to work on the root of the problem. The root of the problem is you create an environment of winners, an environment of leaders, an environment of victors, and you remove the victim component altogether. And it doesn't mean people aren't going to still be mean, but the value of that meanness on the person they're being mean to is reduced dramatically when somebody has enough self-confidence to know that I'm a leader and I'm going out and I'm doing good in this world, and whatever you say or do, that really has no impact in my world. And that's how we change it. It's not, we're not going to get rid of bad people or mean people. We're going to get rid of the power of their words as it relates to who they're saying it to. Mm. And when you create that environment and that culture, that's how you win. And I do that in the gym. It all started at Max Out. I had great leadership program because I had training kids and they're telling me all their problems. And I've been mentoring kids as a cop since I started, because I was mentored as a kid when I had a cop mentor me and when I got myself in a little bit of trouble. And so I've been doing it a long time. I just never gave it a name and I never gave it a purpose. It just sort of was like I owed it as a cop. Since a cop did it to me, I felt that was part of what I was supposed to be doing. And then when I started it at Max Out, it was so successful that I felt bad because I was only limiting it to people who could come to my gym. It's a private training facility, so it's not like, you know, $10 a month. So I took it out into the schools, and especially our local schools. And even they don't buy into it 100% because I'm an outsider.
Mm.
But there's going to be, you know, when I get enough success stories that places that already have strength coaches and they implement it there and they see how different things are, that's what I'm hoping to change. Now, I'm patient. I know it's a long play, but you know,
good for you though.
That's the plan, at least.
Well, you're niching down.
Well, and you know what's funny, Chris? Had, you know, I talked to Chris, and you know, I was blessed to be on his show, and he asked me what my niche is, and I didn't really say this part because it wasn't to me. You know, I'm an inspirational speaker. I'm a cop. I'm a business owner, and I'm trying to, you know, when he's asking these questions, I'm trying to think about it that way. But I guess, Chris, if you're listening, this is my niche down. So we'll see. But yeah, it's pretty cool that that sort of just revealed itself today.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Congratulations. Well, how do people get in touch with you to learn more?
My website is www.mattkubler.com, C-U-B-B-L-E-R.com. And everything's on there. So you can get a hold of me through Max out there. Even my book, A Brother's Love, a Memoir, about my brother and I, is on there. So anything you need is on that website.
That's so cool. And yes, man, without sounding too cheesy or anything like that, God bless you I understand about losing a little brother there, or a brother. So that's tough. And you said you went through about a span of 10 years or so?
13 years.
Yeah. Brian was about probably, about 11 before I kind of figured it out. I was in a funk of all funks. And so it was only recently that I kind of similar to you. So it's, he was my best friend. You know, and you get a call from his pregnant wife at the time saying, you know, me, I had to tell my ma, you know, oh, can you imagine? So I'm the last of three for my ma. And so, man, I just, that really resonated with me, and it's a challenge still to this day, obviously, but you know, I'm okay with it now.
Yeah.
But, I'm there for you on that. So,
well, I'm going to send you a copy of my book. So, and, hope you get to read it, and just at least, you know, I've had a lot of people that have had loss that, even if it's not with a brother or a sibling, that just recognized the pain. And, you know, I'm thankful you came out when you did and made your way through it. And, you know, I have a friend of mine just lost a nephew to cancer, was 9 years old, and like his son. And so, I mean, you think about that, and my heart breaks because I know what they're about to go through. And I want to help people know that, you know, you can't rush healing, and healing comes at its own pace. You can't hide from it. And I tell people all the time, the more I felt it, the more times I went back to that moment, the better my heart felt. Every time I get on stage and I tell the story about my brother and I tell that quilt story, I cry. Every time I cry, it's meant to help me heal.
Yeah.
Not hurt me.
Yeah.
Because it means I can still remember him. I can feel him.
So that's good. Awesome. I still have my bag of his quilts. They'll never be thrown away.
I have a shirt and a safe.
Yeah. So. Yeah. It's wild. But, well, yeah, thank you for just opening up and stopping by today. And thank you for sharing, man. It's just really cool to kind of step into your life for a little bit and see what you have going on. And, I wish you the best of luck with all this stuff. Anything we can do here to help, please let us know.
Thank you. Yeah, just make introduce me to that guy that you just said. And
Danny Sunshine Bauer.
Yeah, he seems like somebody who might be able to help me.
Is there anything else you'd like to say before we wrap up?
No, man. I'm blessed to have been guests on shows and especially yours. And each one's different. Each one's special and unique. And each interview has allowed me to continue to share why I do what I do. And I hope that through all this journey, and I literally just leave it into God's hands. I'm just sort of going wherever I think I'm supposed to be going. And when it's done, I look back, and I always tell people when I give talks that, you know, your life's made up of two dates and a dash. And, you know, what you do with that dash is important. And when I die, there's going to be a room full of people that'll stand up and say, I was a good man and made a difference in our life. And that's really the extent of what I'm doing.
Yep. Amen. I love that. Thank you again, Matt. It's been a privilege. Stay on the line real fast. I'll go ahead and wrap up. This is Jamie J. You've been listening to an incredible story by, I would now say, a good friend of mine, Matt Kubler. Just fantastic hearing what he's doing. You know, one of the things that I want to take from this, or that I would like for you to take from this, is the power of being kind and giving back and instilling that power. And for most of you that are listening right now, you're right around my age. I've seen the demographics. And you probably have kids in junior high or high school. Whether or not you realize this, they see what you're doing. So be kind. Do something nice for people. And hopefully your kids will see that and be kind in turn. So if I take anything away from today, be kind. Do something nice for somebody today and every day, as a matter of fact. Go check out mattkubler.com. That's Matt, M-A-T-T, Kubler, C-U-B-B-L-E-R.com to find everything. Check out his book. That's pretty cool. Love to. I'm excited to read it. So thanks so much for tuning in today. Have a fantastic day. We'll talk to you again soon.